Welcome to the Building Doctor Show with Jens Johansson.
Alrighty, righty. Welcome to the Building Doctor Show. I am your host, Jens Johansson. Glad to see you here to learn more about your buildings. Today, we are going to have a powerful show. It's going to be about solar panels and electric vehicle charging in your community. And we're excited to have Darren Leonard, president of Trinity Structures, on the show today. Trinity Structures is a leading electrified structures company dedicated to streamlining renewable energy production, storage, deployment. And Darren brings extensive experience in solar power, electrical vehicle charging systems, and startup processes across various industries. And the takeaway to that is he comes to us from the commercial and industrial side, and he can give us a bigger picture insight into this world that we're looking at, kind of from big industry thinking on how we can use that as communities to be ahead of the curve. Because I, for one, am tired of being on the residential side and letting things trickle down to us. So I'd like to put us in front of the line. So Darren, thank you for being a part of the thing. Do you want to give us a little intro about who you are?
Oh, I think you did a better job than I'm going to do. It's good to be here. It's very good to be here.
Yeah, welcome. All right. So, of course, you'll have the chance to ask questions of Darren myself free of charge, and we will let Darren elaborate on his stories as we get into this. But as we're doing this little poll thing, we're going to, as always, we do a little poll to understand who is in the audience today and how we can tailor that. And so the poll is launched. And while we're waiting for that to come through, we've got our typical disclaimers. You know, the show is free, so put away your credit card. We're not selling you anything. And the show is for educational content. We're not giving you legal, financial, or engineering advice. And even though it's called the Building Doctor Show, I am not a medical doctor. We're just people on the internet trying to help you run your buildings better. We've helped thousands of people with their building problems, and we've seen what worked and what didn't work when it comes to restoring and running condos. We want to share that with you in hopes that it benefits you. So stick around for the live Q&A at the end. We'll answer as many questions as we can. And if you have more specific questions, stay tuned for a link in the free one-on-one calls with me or Darren. So let's see, we've got some people that are filling this out, and we're going to share the results here. A lot of people in Washington, Oregon, lots of managers and board members, pretty good spread of homeowners, managers, board members. How'd you hear about this webinar? From a neighbor or friend, and J2's email newsletter. And that reminds me, today's newsletter just went out, and it is about solar as well. So make sure you get signed up for those things. And all of you have been through a big repair project. That's good to know that you're still watching. So maybe you learned something from us and you're still watching. So tell your friends and share the link. Brooke, the producer, will be monitoring the chat. And Darren and I will go through the Q&A at the end. We'll be doing a little raffle giveaway at the end. We've got some powerful things to be given away. Little cue on next month's show will be on rotten beams. I don't know if you can see over my shoulder. We've got good examples of beams and columns, and we're seeing a lot of that lately. So how you can spot damage and diagnose those things. So Darren, let's get into today's agenda, which is introduction to solar and EV charging in multifamily projects. And kind of the urgency in our research, you were giving us some really interesting insight into some legislative mandates and energy costs and peak power and implications for property values that made me think. And so we'll be talking about considerations for solar panel systems. You know, in Washington, it's cloudy. In our Utah market, it's sunny and it's very popular there. Oregon, it can have a range of both, but how to help out communities that may have a lot of trees. Deployment of EV charging systems, kind of these charging stations and what they look like. And then how all this governance, if it's something that's in your garage that you put in, well, the community doesn't have a role in that. But if it's a community supplied charging station, that opens up a whole thing that I don't think a lot of communities have been thinking about. So for everybody's reminder, put your questions in the Q&A tab, but watch the chat. Brooke's going to be posting things in there, and it's full of interesting things. But put your questions for Q&A answers in the Q&A section. All right. Why now? Darren, take it away. I've been talking too much. You That's can okay. take it away. Let's talk about legislation and all this stuff. What's going on?
Yeah, it's a crazy conversation and a very dynamic topic as organizationally Trinity is engaged all over the United States, and the variabilities from state to state are significant right now. The one thing that is common is a growing concern about our utilities' ability to fund us with power.
This is the grid, you would call it, I guess.
There are lots of studies out there in relation to the impact of EV charging. I think very few people fully grasp how much electricity an EV charger uses. Okay. They're pretty significant depending on the size and speed in which we deploy. But in the Western United States, specifically in this audience, there are significant growing regulations and legislation. Many of them people are aware of in relation to the elimination of ICE vehicles, internal combustion engines, and the mandate that specifically Washington, Oregon, California, by 2035, any new car sold need to be an EV vehicle.
I'll pause you right there. This is already on the books.
Already on the books.
Already required in the Western, in Washington, Oregon, and California, that all vehicles, new vehicles sold, must be electric. By when?
2035. Here in Washington specifically. There's questions in relation to the maturation of that process and whether they're going to have to amend it. And the issue comes down to power, right? Available power. I think right now the legislation is passed in all three states. So if I own real estate and I'm responsible for recognizing the adoption of electric vehicles is coming at a governmental level down, I would need to be looking at this and getting in front of it as best as possible. In this audience, any aspect in multifamily, the recognition is whether it is a renter or an owner, the data and the research behind if somebody is an EV adopter, what is the number one thing that they're looking for in relation to location, whether they're going to rent or acquire a property. If they're an EV adopter, it's an EV vehicle. It's number one on the list. Can I charge my vehicle overnight? Because it's just not conducive to try to find opportunity charging if you mm-hmm. are driving an electric vehicle. And so as this goes from small percentages of adoption that we're dealing with now, and they're bigger in the Western three states than they are in the rest of the country, if that tips into any material number of the population, which legislation is saying it's going to have to, then I'd be getting in front of this problem right now for the very basic reason is the fact that the current utilities in the Western United States do not have the power to provide energy for this mandate right now.
Okay, so let's break down that down for a second. You said on the West Coast, there's more demand for EVs. Do we know why that is? Is that just sustainability or green thinking, or is it Detroit and engines and V8s in the East, you know, Midwest or East Coast, or what do you think is driving that?
Well, I think EV adoption in most cases follows political ideology. Mm-hmm. That's the primary application, which in the West is left leaning. Opinions. It's just factual. EV adoption is bigger in what would be a blue state than a red state right now.
Okay. And so what about power rates? So Washington, we've got lots of dams. And so it's what, 10, 8 cents a kilowatt hour? So that makes a ton of sense. In California, it's really expensive. So why do you think they're embracing it as an, if it's expensive? Do you have any kind of insight on that?
You're going right after the heart of this issue quick. honestly, we're in the space. We are, as an organization, apolitical. I say it all the time. I have no agenda. I have no political agenda. We are looking at the functional problem that is growing in this nation in relation to our capacity to to fund our lives. An American is absolutely confident that when they flip on the light switch, the power comes on.
Right.
I am telling you that that is not a guarantee in the next 10 years.
So
California is already dealing with it, and it is not going to be isolated to just California and Washington and Oregon. If they think they're immune, they're not.
Okay. So Texas, just over the past couple of winters, they went through some brownouts. And then I recall some, the Texas governor saying our grid is better now. And, but then in the, you know, we've just kind of come not out of winter, but we got emails or texts saying, please control your heat or try to do your best so it doesn't break the grid. And so are all states experiencing that?
Well, Texas is an anomaly. What very few people recognize is Texas is the only state by their state constitution that has to maintain its own power grid. There is no interconnection of Texas to the U.S. power grid. And so they have their own, burgeoning challenges. You could love that or hate that. Personally, I think it's outstanding because they're focused on security. But it creates problems, right? But just because Texas is having a problem doesn't mean it aligns everywhere else because it's a different grid. I think in the Western United States, I'm just going to go back to, there was about a year ago, there was a headline in the Seattle Times where Governor Inslee said the state of Washington is going to have to buy power from other states by 2050. You can search it. You can find it.
2015 or 50? 50.
2050. The reality is that's going to come way before 2050 with the adoption of EV vehicles and the elimination of ICE as new purchases. And I think I said it, but ICE is internal combustion engines. I think the problem is I wanted a journalist to step in and ask the very next question, which nobody did. And that is, if Washington generates more kilowatts per head of any state in the nation, and we're going to have to buy power from other states, so who's going to sell it to us?
Right.
And this is at low level of EV adoptions. We're talking about teens. We're not talking about 50%. Right.
Right.
And so we have this problem. If I'm a condo owner, if I'm a board, I'm an association, I need to be looking. What Trinity Structures is based on is helping our customers, big brands, big corporations right now, develop energy independence because they have the resources to see the problem. They're engaged with the utilities. The utilities are telling them, you want to build a new site, a new distribution center, but I don't have power to give you. They are realizing they have to generate their own energy. And most of the major projects, they have to figure out how to create energy independence, or their business model is gonna be dependent on utilities.
Yeah, so let's talk just a little bit more about that, because in every up and coming community around, we can see the new Amazon distribution center that employs 24,000 people 24 hours a day. And so your experience with some of these bigger brands, and I don't want to pick on any of them, but there, I've got to build this big thing and I can't get enough power. So I have to go to Trinity to say, how do I make my own? Could you give us a little background on that?
Yeah. I mean, right now we have major corporate customers that have hired us to build out microgrids at their facilities simply because they can't be guaranteed that they're going to get enough power from their individual utilities.
Wow.
The other component to it that is material is, as you opened, you said, hey, our cost per kilowatt hour is low here. Well, if you take your last 10-year trend of what you paid for electricity as a Washington State, Oregon State resident, the number has more than doubled in the last 5 to 7 years. Speculation is, in our models, is that number will double to triple again in the next 10 years Because okay. the only way a utility can manage, if they're taking down dams, which makes no sense in relation to this problem, take that, put it to the side, right? Going down a political bend. If we're reducing the amount of power that we're generating at the same time, legislating an increase in consumption of power, and at the same time, put bills in legislation in all Western states, all the three on the coast specifically, to eliminate alternative fuels like propane and natural gas.
Right.
You're funneling this problem into a breaking point. And there's really only one solution. California is dealing with it right now, and they're the precursor to the problem. The only solution is to raise your rates to the point that you stop consuming energy.
Gotcha. Right.
So if you go to Phoenix, my son lives in Phoenix. He moved. I'm down there helping him build furniture in his new place. Mm-hmm. And it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon and it's 104 degrees outside. And he turns off the air conditioning. And I'm like, what in the flip are you doing right now?
What are you doing?
And he goes, well, Dad, it's 5 o'clock. Our rates triple.
And our rates tripled?
Triple, right? Peak, wow. Super peak time. So like in California, there are seven, in the industrial commercial space, there are seven different rate cards depending on what time of day you're using power.
Wow.
So those utilities like SoCal Edison and PG&E, San Diego, they're basically pricing power at such a degree that you're turning off the consumption of it. That's how they manage their grid right now. So when I say we're used to flipping the light switch on, there are times in California you flip the light switch on and the power doesn't come on, right? The room doesn't light up. And this is where independence and energy matters. And I would say if I'm running an association, I would be getting in front of this problem because I don't think our political landscape is going to change direction.
Right, right. Well, I'm reminded of parking spaces. So 10 years ago, we had to have 1,000 square feet of parking space per bedroom, or, you know, I've forgotten what it was, but it was, you have to have enough room in your community to have enough cars and enough parking so it doesn't congest the street. And now the building code has shifted around of, you don't get any extra parking and we're just going to make you, you know, incentivize you to ride the bus or ride the train. And here's mass transit. And so now these skinny, where they tear down two houses and put up, you know, six condos or something, and parking's a nightmare in the community, and, you know, just on and on and on. So it sounds like it's kind of following those same paths. Can you give us a...
I think that direction was also politically motivated, right? The elimination of vehicles for their motive. And I think this is a very, very, very similar scenario that's going on right now.
Yeah, it's a similar, you know, designed to reduce carbon, you know, footprint or whatever, you know, exhaust and reducing the number of cars. So it's kind of intertwined in that same thing. Can you, you know, we've seen the highway over the road Tesla supercharger station that charges it really fast, and that obviously uses a ton of energy. But the things we're talking about are the plug-in overnight chargers I put in my house, and we'll get to those, and we call them type twos, I think.
Yeah.
How much power can you compare it to an electric range on Broil? You know, how much power does that type of charger use when I'm charging my car at home?
There's a lot of variability in the answer to that question, simply because amperages and kilowatts are a formula that converge from 700 kilowatt, you know, class 8 truck chargers, 350 mm-hmm. kilowatt Tesla superchargers sitting on the side of the roads, right, in Leavenworth or in Bend or mm-hmm. you know, in Provo. I think they consume more than you know. There's no easy answer to the question, but a level 2 charger is definitely consuming more power than electric range.
Okay.
You get to a level 3 charger, which is a DC fast charger, right? A level 3 charger is consuming enough power to power many, many homes.
So what do we see when you pull into the parking lot at the Garden Inn Hotel, where it's, you know, it has a couple little chargers that you plug in your car and it takes 15 hours to charge your car? Is that's a level 2?
Level 2. The easiest way to define them visually for people, level 2s are generally going to be a smaller box of some sort, usually sitting on a post, attached to a wall. a DC fast charger, or what many call now a level three charger, you know what they are. They're, it's like a 6 foot person standing in front of you. They're very big. They're significant. And they drain the grid faster than you could ever imagine.
Okay. So when people come home from work, and let's say I look out in my community and I see 30% of the cars in a couple of years are going to be electric. And so they come home and they turn on their oven to cook dinner and they've plugged in their car. That's really going to be a big draw on things during that time frame, right?
Yeah, I mean, a level two, a lower power level two charger, which is usually all that's necessary for home. I'm plugging my car in when I get home from work. Maybe we go out to dinner, I plug it in. By the time I go to work in the morning, is it 85 to 90% charged? Mm-hmm. Yeah, those can be low amperage chargers. You know, those are going to require a 50 amp circuit. So it's going to require a circuit that you have in your house to be able to power it, but it won't take you more than 50. To get anything beyond that into residential, whether it's multifamily or single family, you would need a dual electrical service.
Okay. All right. So yeah, just to kind of summarize, folks, the slide, you know, why now? And I think, you know, I wanted Darren to elaborate a little bit on what's going on, but you know, some of the bullet points here, more and more electric cars are on the road. So we're getting more and more requests from communities that we work with saying, hey, we need some chargers, or we need to figure this out. And we kind of think I don't know if we have enough, you know, and how do we do this? So obviously folks want to charge at home and overnight for convenience, but it's also cheaper and more convenient than stopping at a supercharger or an over the road charger, they're called, that's faster. You can pick up more energy in a shorter amount of time and continue on your trip, but you're paying a higher rate to presumably for the convenience, but also to pay for those charging stations. Newer communities are building these in, but again, they're an upgrade. So if you're lucky, there'll be two in the garage. And so what happens if you need more? You know, we want more. We've got a couple, but they're always full. And so, you know, we talked a little bit about the solar being a free way to access the power, but there's also a slow but continuing desire to be ecologically friendly, as well as a little bit of a growing desire to be a little bit more self-sufficient and essentially off-grid thinking, because we've been, you know, forced to turn off our power at 5 or due to storms and other shortages that we've experienced lately. So this is kind of a genesis of what we're talking about today. You know, back to big business, didn't Enterprise, or who's the one that has Tom Brady on it? Enterprise or Hertz? Didn't they just walk away from a big Tesla? I remember 6 months ago, we now have electric cars, and here's Tom Brady getting out of a Tesla. And then all of a sudden, we're selling all our Teslas for cheap. What happened there? Do you have any insight?
We know what happened very specifically, actually. We are one of the major car rental companies is one of our customers, not that one. But in essence, there's no better example of the Trinity business model, which we'll stay away from here. I don't think it's really that relevant for the audience in what we do. But the problem wasn't the EV car problem. The problem was that this legislation was coming, and I think Hertz executives made a decision we're going to have an EV fleet anyway. But nobody stopped and determined operationally how does a rental car company turn an EV vehicle, right?
Right.
You all rented a car. You show up back at the car rental place. You drop your car off. They run it through the back. They clean it. They gas it. They bring it back out and give it to the next customer.
Right.
So if your car, if I don't have a DC fast charger, and I'll put this in perspective, right? So if you've driven through any of these like Centralia, Bend, Provo, and you see these Tesla supercharger stations, one of those chargers consumes enough power to power 60 to 70 homes.
Wow.
Right. Okay. So when they buy those Teslas and Hertz says, okay, we need to go put chargers on our facilities to turn those vehicles. Right. I need to have one of those chargers to charge it enough in 30 minutes. Right.
Right.
Well, the power companies, the utilities didn't have power to give them for those superchargers. So they had to put in level twos, and level twos means it took them 8 hours to charge that car. They couldn't gas it up in 5 minutes. They had to wait 8 hours. So nobody ever at Hertz determined operationally how were those going to flow through my business. That's why it failed. Right. It wasn't the car.
Losing a day while it's charging. Yeah.
Well, and it's the rental car companies. This is one of those unintended consequences, and why we have been hired by one of the rental car companies is because these mandates in the Western United States, if they don't figure out how to get power to these rental car lots,
right,
there will be no cars to rent at the airports.
Right. And so a rental car lot is just a spare parking lot in the corner of some place that maybe a shuttle runs you to. And so the infrastructure wasn't thought through on how they got the power there, right?
Utilities are telling the rental car companies that it's going to take them 5 to 10 years to get them infrastructure to increase their power.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Which also applies to a condo.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the important topic of this conversation, and that is the fact that if I am not, as an association, a board planning for this conversion now, I live in the PUD and PSE trade areas up here in Washington, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we meet with all the utilities, and the utilities right now are saying it is 5 to 10 years before we can address this problem for any commercial or large residential site, right? Multifamily site. It's wow. A huge problem. And if you wait to get in front of it, you'll be too late.
Yep. Okay, perfect. So nice segues. Everybody, have we piqued your attention? This, like I said, doing research on this, I was like, whoa, didn't think about that. And yeah, I have a Tesla Model 3. I love it. I charge it at home because I have an older house that had an electric furnace that I had a double pole 40 amp breaker for in the box. And so I upgraded to gas. Maybe now I'm breaking laws because I'm burning natural gas, but we had that spare breaker. And so it was very easy for me to go click, click and put in a charger. But I see the, you know, I use the superchargers occasionally and they're fast and convenient, but I can't imagine if I had to install a timer so I wouldn't be charging my car during a peak hour, but that's probably, Washington ignorance with cheap power and we don't have those peak times yet. So anyway, this
well, hit. You will very soon.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So the next slide, we talked a little bit about the legislation of 2035. Who knows if that'll get modified or postponed or whatnot. We talked about energy costs and peak and off peak, specifically in California. Do other states you know of have? Oh, you said Arizona. Do you know how? I mean, is it
the majority fairly common? Majority of states in the union actually have varying rate cards depending on when you consume energy.
Oh, okay.
Washington is rare in that.
Right. So again, ignorant, free power, hydroelectric dams. It's just always on. So, but we need to plan for this. Okay. So then energy grid and the suburbia market there, we talked about that. So if you have, and you can't really say if you have an older property, you might not have power. I mean, it's kind of a luck of the draw of where you are. I mean, if you're near, so how does that, if you have a condo near industry, you might have access to more power. What's your experience there? I can understand,
yeah,
if you're on
no, the road. It's a very valid point. If you are in a dual zoned environment, if you bridge, if you're in a, you know, a let's talk about a SODO or, you know, a commercial residential zone, you will likely have greater access to power. I think in suburbia, I don't think there's a lot of change coming. And this is the component, right? While we don't fundamentally do residential work as a company, we will do large developers, multifamily in that realm. And those are traditionally around external parking environments. We don't so much get involved in the garage rooms unless it's rooftop, but it's going to be a very, very significant issue if you're not in a urban core. And I just don't think there's no easy solution. What's happening, and we look at California as sort of the harbinger of what's coming, because it's happening, right? They did adopt this sooner, and now legislation is driving. In California right now, they just eliminated, the state just eliminated January 1st, the purchase of any ICE truck, internal combustion tractor trailer for drayage. That means all the ports in California can only use, if you have to buy a new vehicle, it has to be an EV or a hydrogen powered vehicle. You're not getting into a whole new realm of problems. Those trucks take 1 megawatt of power a day, which megawatt of power powers about 200 homes. And if you already don't have enough power and now they're mandating the deployment of those, you're creating a catastrophic problem. The utilities don't, I was just in a meeting with the 14 largest utilities in the country on this topic. The utilities don't have a lot of concern for it because they have developed rate cards that allow them to maintain their revenues, if not increase their revenues, while you consume less. And in California, ironically, many, many homeowners are just simply adopting a different lifestyle where they are turning off their air conditioning or they are not consuming power because they're trying to control their spend. I think that might play in California. I think as it starts spreading east, I think you're going to run into some pretty significant opinions around this.
Well, so I understand being warm at night, you can open the windows. What if it's cold and you have to turn the heat off? That's on the opposite East Coast side.
Primary load drains are summer oriented, summer and evening oriented, right? So as you look at as you take Washington and Oregon, I don't know about Utah right now. I don't know their rate card analysis. I haven't done a project in Utah. But as you look at Washington and Oregon right now, they're running off of a single rate structure. And that's at residential. Commercial, they have multiple rates. But as those processes change, where your rate card increases are going to come, it's going to be the 5 to 9 o'clock hour. That's everybody gets home from work. That's when everybody starts consuming power. And then it will then have other elements that will be associated to peak summer, peak heat, right? Heat is what drains the grid. In the winter, heaters take some, but they don't put the same load that air conditioning does on the system.
Okay. So yeah, air conditioners require more energy than heaters, right?
Yep.
And you have a few different kinds of heat sources as and only electric for air, AC, right?
Yeah, only a percentage of the residences will actually be pulling electric heat. So 100% of your HVAC comes, your AC comes from electricity. So
Right. Okay, got it. All right, the last thing on this slide was just thinking about property values. And so, and I'm reminded back to, remember when we didn't have high-speed internet or you couldn't get cable or you couldn't quite get, internet.
I'm old enough to remember that. Yes.
Yeah. Right. And so it's I'm thinking of that because it's like, choosing a place to live, saying, well, do you have EV chargers? Do you have solar capacity? Do you have enough energy? And if you don't, then I don't want you. I'm going to go to this other place that does. And so potentially planning for that just with a few community EV chargers, but having the capacity so that people can add things, this will become a bigger deal because, in the fiber optic or in the cable standpoint, we wanted to, as the cable provider, I wanted to dig a ditch to your place because I could sign you up for monthly revenue. And the grid is saying, I don't want you to hook up because I'll just have to build my systems. And so there's really not an incentive for them to give you more except for higher, taxation level peak charges.
I'm gonna tell you right now, there's no incentive for them to bring you more power simply because they're just going to increase your cost and they're going to generate the same revenue.
Right. Gotcha.
And that's the California model, and that's what everybody needs to be paying attention to. They have not done anything to improve the electrification or the creation of new energy because they've gotten away with it. I think California is in for an awakening, a bigger awakening than they've
Yeah, I mean, before we go on, talk about that. Is there going to be a revolt? What are people going to do?
Boy, I don't know. There's lots of things.
Are they going to just dump their electric cars? And
I think there's a saturation right now. This is where I say, as we look at 2030 and 2035 legislation mandates, you know, I think if the problem gets significant enough, I don't think Washington and Oregon are looming into what I classify as epic issues or rolling brownouts. I do think if they move forward in relation to commercial fleets, in class eight trucking, class six trucking, you know, your box trucks and your semi trucks have to be EV, or percentage have to be EV. We got a whole new game on our hands. I think the piece coming back to the topic of property values, the issue is simply going to be, the resellability of an existing property and how does that impact the overall value of the building, right, in multifamily space. Right now, the best data that somebody could go look at is in the apartment rental space and in the hospitality space. There's been pretty significant research done in regards to if you're driving an EV vehicle, what is the search criteria on where I'm going to stay for a hotel stay?
Absolutely.
And if you know this with a Model 3, if you're driving to Northern California, you are looking for a hotel under one search criteria.
Yep.
Can you charge that vehicle when you're sleeping at night?
Yep.
And right now in Washington and Oregon, about 10% of the population, give or take, I'm rounding, right, is an EV adopter. It's about 15% in California right now. Utah is in the mid to high single digits. Those people right now, if you have not adopted an EV charging platform inside your property, those people are not looking at your property to acquire or to lease. They just aren't. So your population of buyers, if you're an association or a board, your population of buyers is now 9 out of 10 Washingtonians or Oregonians, or it's 85% of Californians, right? That number with this legislation is going to go from 10% to 20% to 30% as far as who is not going to be interested in your property if you haven't gotten in front of this. And those are probably the two things that are most critical. One is preserve your property values by having a charging plan and develop it in energy independence, so that you preserve your right to power said charging and residences, but also you hedge yourself against what is going to be exploding energy costs. For the people that have been used to 8 cents a kilowatt hour in Washington, there's going to be a one in front of that eight within a matter of years.
Right.
It just is. And it's going to go up, and it has gone up. If people pay attention, if you've lived in the same place for 5 to 10 years, go pull an old power bill.
Yep.
And look at the difference, right? It just creeps on you.
Yep. So, okay. Nice segue into the next slide. You said roughly 10%. So we're trying to find some data. You know, Kelley Blue Book says, you know, about 8% of EVs are on the road, and this is 2023. And so Gallup in early 23 says 4% to 12% thinking about it. So I'd kind of munch those into that 8 to 10%. But 43 might consider it in the future. And that's a big number. 40%, 41%. No way would I ever buy one. Okay, great. but if you had those, you're over 50 right there pretty quickly in 23. So then you jump over to currently the Cybertruck back orders are over 2.5 million trucks. They expect to have 25% of the truck market within 2 years.
Yeah.
And so it's just insane. These people have paid money to be in this order pool and they are waiting an additional 2 years to get their truck, but 2.5 million orders. The Model 3 the Model Y was the most popular selling vehicle in the world.
Yep.
Regardless of electric or not. So what we're just trying to say here is people are moving there and they're moving there pretty quickly. And all vehicle manufacturers have some kind of plan to roll out their EVs. You've seen all sorts of different models and brands. You've seen many pull back a little bit. You've seen, you know, they're trying, they're every brand is working on it, and this has to do again with that legislation, but also, I mean, consumer sentiment, consumer demand. So just because you look out over your parking lot and only see 10% out there, get ready. there's a big demand popping up.
Yeah. That data on the screen is national data.
Right.
And it's
yeah, good point.
2 to 3x that in the Western United States.
I see a lot. I mean, it feel like I see more, you know, EVs on the road, I mean, than 10%. And so I'm beginning to see a lot of them, and maybe that's just because I'm
taking into account where the locales, right? The numbers are, yep. The numbers, again, they follow blue and red. There are a lot less EV adoption in Eastern Washington than Western Washington.
Gotcha.
Right. So, I mean, where my property is definitely relevant. Who the demographics are of my target leasee or purchaser are definitely relevant. And I think honestly, if I'm targeting or I'm in an area that's EV focused, I would be targeting very cleanly the Tesla demographic.
Sure.
Because it's not that there's news that EVs are slowing down. It's actually less than that. It's more that American and European manufacturers cannot compete with Tesla.
Right.
Tesla is so vertically integrated and so dominant in the space. They started so much sooner than everybody else. It's going to take years for alternatives to really prop up. Mm-hmm. So I think EVs are going to continue to grow. I don't own one, but I will own one. I would not own it as my primary car. I would own it as a secondary car. Mm-hmm. But they're going to continue to grow, and then legislation is going to mandate the change. So it's not going to go away. I could give you a pretty interesting argument that in 20 years, there might be a different fuel alternative.
Sure.
But that's not going to happen in the next 10 years of my board or association management.
Right, right. Yeah, just different technologies, and just, you know, no new car sold after 2035. But there's still going to be 20 years of gas vehicles hanging around until they break or, you know, crash and get totaled, et cetera, probably even longer than that. So we will be dealing with this. So cars and EVs are kind of driving this demand on the grid and kind of driving, get that pun? I didn't even think about that one. Driving the demand on the grid and kind of why are we talking about this? So then let's go over to, you know, how do we make our own power? How do we get, you know, how do we get off the grid? How do we sell it back to the grid? How do we have power for emergencies? So.
This podcast is part of J2's free live webinar, The Building Doctor Show. To attend the live show and ask your questions during the Q&A, visit www.j2consultants.com.